I'm Dr. Kent, and welcome to my show. I air every Sunday at 9 a.m. I'm a Boise area psychiatrist since 1990 in private practice. I'm going to be talking a lot about a variety of mental health topics, but we'll spend a fair amount of my time discussing depression, which is the most common. There's very few families around that I know of that are not untouched by this or by this illness. I think it's one of the most disabling conditions in the world. There's statistics for that, actually. There's $193 billion annually lost in productivity from depression alone. It's also a killer, and it results in a high loss of life. I mentioned this last week when I was on the show. Every 12 minutes, an American takes his own life. Every hour, a veteran takes his own life. And every day, an Idahoan ends his life prematurely. It's the second leading cause of death behind accidents in young people. So it's a very serious thing, and that's why I talk a lot about depression on the show and try to give you information, give you things you can use that can help you. I know there's a lot of people out there that can relate to what I'm saying. I know there are people that have lost someone close to them to suicide. Losing someone to suicide tends to be more devastating and seems so nonsensical. We often ask ourselves, how could this happen? And we often say, they seem to be doing okay. They had everything going for them. But we tend to externalize the factors that we see in people's lives, but we really don't know what's going on with them. We don't really know what they're going through. If it had to do with external factors, then why aren't people that are homeless committing suicide at a higher rate? They have nothing going for them. So there's something different going on, and the answer really lies inside of the brain. That's why I spend a lot of time talking about the brain and giving more information. Circumstances certainly can play a role in depression and in suicide, but the brain is the main thing. The brain is just an organ, albeit an important one. Researchers have slowly peeled back the layers and have come to a better understanding of the biological nature of persistent recurrent depression, which in our business we call major depressive disorder, or MDD. And MDD is truly a biological phenomenon. Anyone who has experienced it can attest to its pervasive grip. Mild forms may respond to less aggressive interventions, such as changes in diet, exercise, lifestyle changes, and positive thinking, but more severe forms are tougher to root out. And that's why there are so many interventions that have been developed to try to combat this deadly illness. Symptoms of depression can include low mood or sad mood, a loss of energy or feeling of fatigue, loss of interest in doing things, a lack of pleasure, irritability, insomnia, even problems with sleeping too much, which we call hypersomnia. There's also either a reduction or an increase in appetite, feelings of worthlessness, guilt, and hopelessness. All of these things generally lead to a sense of life not being worth living, which then results in suicidal thoughts. For many of those listening to me today, this may ring true. In fact, feelings of suicide are something that most people at some point in their life will experience. Hopelessness is the gateway to suicidal thoughts and actions, and that's why hopelessness is something I talk a lot about, because it's such a dangerous feeling that people have. I have a quote which says, "Totally without hope, one cannot live. To live without hope is to cease to live. Hell is hopelessness." It is no accident that above the entrance to Dante's hell is the inscription, "Leave behind all hope, you who enter here." That was by Jürgen Moltmann, A Theology of Hope. So this is Dr. Kent. I'm just reminding you this is my show. I have it every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. I have a website, which is treasurevalleytms.com, and I'm on Facebook. So go to Treasure Valley TMS and Facebook and follow me. I'm constantly posting information about mental illness and depression and various treatments. So if you experience major depressive disorder or MDD or know somebody that does have this, pay close attention to any feelings of hopelessness. Those are the things that are, that's the one feeling that's very destructive and very dangerous. And telling someone that they shouldn't feel this way is not helpful, and it often makes it worse. It assumes that getting over depression is somehow a choice or just a weakness that we can readily think ourselves out of. We might as well tell someone to just get over their diabetes. Both are biologically based, just in different organs. We tend to believe we can think our way out of anything when it comes to our brain. That just really isn't the case in most instances. Do we tell people with strokes just to get over it? People with MS or Parkinson's disease or cerebral palsy or Alzheimer's just to get over it? Or to tell them to do what I do because that works? To me, that's patronizing, and it doesn't make things better. The solutions for depression are more complicated. We have to treat the brain as an organ, which it is. We often think of the brain as some sort of separate entity that somehow floats in the air above the rest of our body, but that really isn't the case. The fact of the matter is the brain is very complex, and it controls most parts of our body, and parts of our body also influence our brain. In future shows, I hope to expound a little bit on the intimate connection between the brain and our gut, and how powerful that is. The gut has been described as the second brain. It has many of the same neurotransmitters as the brain. And that topic to me is very fascinating, and so I'm going to devote an entire episode to just talking about that. But I'll give you a heads up when I do that so you can be ready to go. I'm going to try to involve a national expert if I can. So just for a second, I'd like to expound on different types of depression. We talk about this MDD or this major depressive disorder, but there's other descriptors that are used and other types of depression that are out there that you might hear about. So let me just talk about that for a second. There's also bipolar depression, which occurs in people that have bipolar disorder. So what is bipolar disorder? It's a type of mood disorder where we have more severe mood swings. We have manic mood swings where people are going to have an elevated or irritable mood, lots of energy, racing thoughts, but they also go through bouts of depression. In fact, as the illness progresses over time, the depression becomes more prominent than the manic side and becomes more severe. Some of the most severe depressions are in people who suffer from bipolar disorder. There's also a condition which you experience here in Idaho quite a bit of. It's seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, S-A-D. And that's related to our lack of light that we get in the wintertime. As you know, in Idaho, our days shorten considerably compared to the summer. In fact, we're really part of the Northwest, and the Northwest has pretty significant shifts in daylight. And that causes people to get depressed during the winter months. And in my practice, I've certainly seen that. There's also people that have postpartum depression after having a baby, or what we call peripartum depression, and it can be related entirely to that postpartum period. It's also very severe in some cases. Some women can actually become psychotic after they've had a baby. They can get severely depressed and quite suicidal, and sometimes even homicidal. So it's nothing to be trivializing at all. There's also what we call premenstrual dysphoric disorder, and that has to do with a premenstrual period where people get depressed. It really looks and feels just like depression and actually responds to antidepressants. So it seems to be some sort of mini depression that people can go through. And then, of course, there's what we call situational depression. That's where people have an event or something come up and they experience depression related to that event. And often they can get better without medications in those situations. So thanks for listening in on this segment. I'm going to be back in just a minute.
Dr. Ken, I'm back on my show.
It's my show. It comes on every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. Thank you for listening, and I hope you're getting something out of this. I'm a psychiatrist in the Boise area. I'm talking a lot about depression today. I'm going to have someone on the end of my show to talk about his experience with depression and how he's found something that's been very successful in his case. I really want to reach out to listeners who experience depression, or if you know somebody who does. I really believe that knowledge is power, that we need to take the power back that depression seems to sap from us. And knowledge and the right treatment is what I call kryptonite. The good news is that there's lots of effective treatments available. But I call treatment when I meet with patients, I call it custom work. One size doesn't fit all. One medication or form of psychotherapy might not work for one person, but it would work for another one. And why is that? Why don't they not all work for everybody? Well, I think the reason is because we're genetically unique. We have vastly different exposures to life experiences, traumas, environmental toxins, immune system disturbances, many other things that make each one of us unique and different. So I would expect that there would be a varied response to treatment. So every patient that I see in my practice, it's custom work. The good news is that we have a vast arsenal to treat depression. We have some exciting new treatments such as Deep TMS that are now available. And so I'm going to talk about that a lot. On this segment, I'm going to start into talking more about the treatment options we have for depression. And also visit my website at treasurevalleytms.com, where I have information on depression, on deep TMS, and other mental health conditions. I have links to authoritative sources, videos, lots of different things. You can also ask me a question. You can share your own experience on my website. And I'm also on Facebook. You can go to Treasure Valley TMS on my Facebook page. I'm posting almost every day. So I like to be very authoritative in what I present. I want to present the facts and data. If I do present my opinion, I'll let you know it's my opinion. I also have my bio on my website so you can get to know me a little bit better. I have videos of myself talking, and I have testimonials of my patients, so you can really get to know me a little bit better. So I'm going to jump into this segment. I want to talk about the scope of treatment possibilities for treating what we call major depressive disorder, or MDD. That's the more severe form of depression. I want to start out talking a little bit about psychotherapy. People have heard of counseling and psychotherapy, but people don't realize that there are hundreds, maybe thousands of different described forms of psychotherapy. There's whole schools of thought devoted to these different forms of psychotherapy. And not all psychotherapy has been rigorously studied, but some have. So let me talk a little bit about that. Not all forms of psychotherapy have been effective for depression, but the ones that have include the following. There's what we call cognitive behavioral psychotherapy, or CBT. You'll hear that all the time when you in the community if you're asking about therapy for depression. That's probably the most commonly used form of treatment for depression. It's well established. There's a lot of research behind it, and it works as a standalone treatment, but it works more effectively in combination with medication. Other forms of psychotherapy that are supposed to be helpful and shown to be helpful include interpersonal psychotherapy, both individual and group, psychodynamic psychotherapy, non-directive supportive therapy, problem-solving therapy, behavioral activation therapy. Now, these all sound like just generic terms, but these are actually defined types of therapy. But there's no clear data that one is more effective than another for mild to moderate depression. So any of these forms of psychotherapy could be helpful and useful. And it probably will depend on the therapist and what they're comfortable using and what you're comfortable doing. So in terms of medications, there's a whole plethora of medications on the market. It's pretty daunting if you're not experienced with this to figure out which ones to use. How do you go about choosing a medication? But there is actually a systematic way of doing this. Going back in time, when I started my training back in the 1980s, so I'm really dating myself, back then we only had several classes of antidepressants available. The first class that we had available and the most commonly used was called tricyclic antidepressants, or TCAs. We still use those today, and I'll talk a little bit about those. And the other ones we had were called monoamine oxidase inhibitors, or another term for it was MAOIs. So examples of the TCAs include Elavil, imipramine, nortriptyline, protriptyline, doxepin. Examples of MAOIs include Parnate and Nardil as the most widely prescribed. In fact, I used all of these medications in the past. I rarely use them now. With the MAOIs, they have some problems. They require certain dietary considerations, as well as certain medications have to be avoided. So they have potential serious interaction problems. But they still have a place. especially for those who've been through lots of different medications, they still could be used with good success. So they're still in the market. They've still survived the test of time. But safer drugs have come along, so that's why these older drugs aren't used too much. In fact, TCAs are dangerous in overdose, and they can block the heart, and the electrical connection in the heart can be blocked, and people can actually die from taking an overdose of a TCA. And we still see those kinds of overdoses in the hospital. The better-known drugs for depression are what we call serotonin reuptake blockers, or SSRIs. These drugs are not classified by chemical structure like the TCAs and MAOIs, but rather on their effect on neurotransmitters in the brain. And in fact, the SSRIs actually don't have the same chemical structures. So if someone doesn't respond to one SSRI, another one might work. But this is not true of the TCAs and the MAOIs, which if one of the TCAs doesn't work, it's highly likely the other ones won't work because they're so chemically similar. Examples of the SSRIs include Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Celexa, and Lexapro, and there's others. These are the most commonly ones that are prescribed in the world right now, and they're the best tolerated and safe. They're considered what we call first-line drugs. Now, the SSRIs are started in 1988 with Prozac. The next one to come out was Paxil, then Zoloft, and then other ones like Celexa and Lexapro came out later. And they're heavy use today. Those are the most commonly used drugs. But they do have some problems, and one of which is a drop in sexual functioning, which is not true of every patient who takes these drugs, but it can decrease sex drive as well as decrease sexual performance. So they do have a little bit of a dark side that way. I'll be back in just a minute to talk about more medications and other drug classes in just
Kent,
a second.
Tune
my show here
minutes,
every Sunday
right
from
back.
9 to 10 a.m. Thank you for tuning in. I've been talking about depression, about different treatment for depression. I start out talking about some of the older medications we use for depression called the TCAs or the MAOIs. And then I went into the SSRIs or serotonin reuptake blockers, which more people are more familiar with. I'm going to talk about a few other drug classes related to treatment for depression. I think you'll get the sense that there's a lot of different treatments out there, a lot of different medications. And how do we go about choosing these medications? How do we make those decisions? And I'll try to help you with that a little bit. The next class of antidepressants are called SNRIs, or serotonin norepinephrine reuptake blockers. And they affect both serotonin and norepinephrine. And it's sort of a hybrid drug. Examples include Effexor, Cymbalta, and Prestique, and there's a few others. But these are the most commonly used, and people will be familiar with these drugs. The other drug that kind of doesn't fit in the category very well is called Wellbutrin. And that's still very commonly used. It works on norepinephrine and dopamine. It's considered an NDRI, or norepinephrine dopamine reuptake inhibitor. So why do we talk about all these neurotransmitters and talk about these drugs? Well, the main reason is these drugs are classified by their effect on the brain. But we don't know exactly how they work still. Even though they affect these neurotransmitters, we're not sure if that's the entire reason why they work. In fact, these can work on these neurotransmitters immediately upon administering them to patients, but they may take weeks to respond. So there's other factors going on besides the neurotransmitters. But there are also some newer drugs, but I'm not going to go into those today. Those are just coming on the market. I'm not as convinced that they're as effective, but I'm not sure yet. I'm one to be a little slow to adopt new drugs until I've seen them on the market for a while. But all medications, all drugs do have side effects. That's the one thing that is for sure. And let me go over that just briefly with you to kind of give you an idea of what types of side effects these medications have. The first drug class I talked about today is called tricyclic antidepressants, or TCAs. And TCAs have been around a long time, since the 1950s. Imipramine was really one of the first drugs found to be effective for depression, so it's been around a long time. And the common side effects we see with those drugs include dry mouth, weight gain, effects on the electrical conduction of the heart. In normal doses, that's not a big deal, but these drugs are very dangerous in overdose. So That's something to be very careful about. They can also somewhat negatively affect sex drive and response. So those are some of the side effects with TCAs. The MAOIs are the monoamine oxidase inhibitors, which we don't use much anymore, but they still have some use and still have a place, have similar side effects to the CCAs, pretty much the same sort of side effects, but they also require that we have a strict adherence to a special diet, which is low in tyramine. So it's a special diet that has that restriction, and also certain medications have to be avoided with the MAOIs. So because of that, they just don't get much use today. There's many other drugs that are much easier to use, better tolerated, and we don't have to hassle with that. And then there's the SSRIs. And the SSRIs are the serotonin drugs like Prozac and Zoloft and Paxil and Celexa and Lexapro. And these are the most commonly used antidepressants in the world. And they're usually well tolerated. However, I think the most notorious side effect for this type of drug is a drop in sex drive or inability to achieve orgasm. So there is that problem. But that doesn't happen with every single patient, so it's something you have to kind of wait and see on. But with SSRIs, they're less prone to weight gain, so they're more popular for that reason. None of the antidepressants are addictive. That's the good news. You're not going to get hooked on these drugs. There are medications that get used for depression, which are called benzodiazepines, such as Valium, Xanax, Ativan. These are used to treat anxiety, and people who get depressed get anxiety. So those drugs are used pretty commonly. Those can be addictive. Not everybody gets addicted to them, but that's something to be aware of. The other thing to be aware of as well, I've talked about this in a previous show, is that antidepressants predictably lose their odds of success with each successive trial. Some people complain also that they feel medicated on the medications. So that is a problem. As you treat people with depression, as you'll see with the speakers I bring on the show, most of them all have tried, well, they've all tried antidepressants for years, and either the medicine didn't work or it lost its effectiveness. So that is a problem. The last type of treatment that we use for depression is ECT or electroconvulsive therapy. Electroconvulsive therapy was discovered in the 1930s and 40s, but really wasn't put into clinical use until the 1950s, and is still in pretty heavy use today. It's one of the strongest treatments for depression. It's very robust, but it is a bit problematic at times. It does require using general anesthesia. There's sometimes problems with temporary short-term memory loss in some patients, and there's logistical problems getting it done. You have to go to a hospital, you have to be put under anesthesia, and you have to do this between 8 and 12 times, maybe more. It works in about 70 to 80% of the cases. It's very effective, but it's not a cure, so people might have to go back to it in the future potentially. But it is a good treatment when it's needed, and I've referred patients for it, and I've actually done ECT back in the 1990s for a 7-year period, so I'm very familiar with it. It does unfortunately carry a considerable stigma, and especially from the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson. It portrayed ECT in a very negative way, and people have ever since thought of it as shock treatment and a very barbaric type of treatment, which it really isn't. It's actually safer than getting your tooth pulled, but it does require quite a bit of effort to get it done. So the remaining biological treatment that I want to talk about briefly, and I've talked a lot about it, is TMS, or transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is an entirely different approach. TMS, or deep TMS, is very effective. It does not require any anesthesia. It has no systemic side effects. It's much easier to administer, and it's covered by most insurances, including Medicare. I've talked extensively about this treatment option, so go to my website at treasurevalleytms.com to get more information. On the next upcoming segment, you're going to have a patient who's experienced deep TMS for himself. So stay tuned, and
welcome
thanks for
back.
Listening
I'm
to my
Dr.
show.
I'm Dr. Kent. I'm Thank a Boise you. Area psychiatrist. Welcome to my show. I air every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m.
Today on this segment, I'm invited Kevin on my show. Kevin wants to share his experience with his severe depression, and he's agreed to come on my show. This is the first time he's ever appeared on radio, so he's a little nervous, understandably, and so am I sometimes. But we're going to just ask some questions and have a conversation. First of all, Kevin, just a little background about yourself. What do you do for a living?
I'm a computer programmer. I've been programming for, probably about 15 years now. I work as a full-time employee.
Okay. You don't need the name of the company, but I understand you work for a German company. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
You live here in Boise?
Yeah, I work from home.
That's awesome. Probably nice to be able to work from home.
Yes, very much.
Gives you some flexibility. So how long have you been living in the Boise area?
I've been living here for about 5 or 6 years now.
Where are you from originally?
Originally from Illinois, and then I lived in Ohio for a while.
So kind of from the Midwest?
Yes.
That's where I'm from, too. Just got back from Indiana yesterday, so had to visit my family back there. Well, I want to start out by kind of asking a little bit about the depression you've experienced. First of all, what has your depression been like? What have you, before you got into treatment, what was it like for you to be depressed, and what were the kind of things you experienced, the symptoms you might have had? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I actually have, unipolar depression, it would be called, where so I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when I was 13, but I've never had a manic episode, so I don't really have bipolar disorder. But the depression, when it hit, would be sometimes I just feel down, bummed out, uninterested in things. At its worst, I wouldn't even be able to get out of bed and shower and eat or anything like that. I just, spend all day in bed feeling miserable.
That doesn't sound like any fun.
No, it was not.
I'm assuming it affected your work as well.
Yes, I have used up all my sick leave.
So you really can't afford to miss much work at this point.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah. Has it negatively affected any relationships you might have had or in your life, could you say?
Yes, I had a steady girlfriend for a while who just wasn't able to deal with the depression. And so that was, I've been single ever since then. That was about 10 years ago.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as part of your depression, have you ever felt hopeless?
Yes, very much so.
And what did that feel like?
It felt like there's really no point in living, that I'm always going to be miserable. And the only thing that really kept me alive is my family would be upset if I killed myself. And so I didn't kill myself, but I had thought about it quite a bit.
Okay, have you ever attempted suicide?
Yes, I've made 3 suicide attempts.
Were they pretty serious attempts?
Yes. One time I ended up in the ICU for about 3 or 4 days because I had actually tried to kill myself by water intoxication, where if you drink enough water, you screw up your electrolytes, and I had a seizure and was in the ICU, and that was no fun at all. Another time I tried via hypothermia, just staying outside during, in the middle of the winter. And if I hadn't woken up, I would have died.
And you had a third one as well, did you say?
Yes, the third one was via alcohol intoxication.
Wow. Well, sounds like you got to the end of your rope for sure.
Yes.
That must have been a very miserable thing for you and very dark.
Yeah, it really scared my family also, which is the last thing I wanted to happen.
So did your family try to intervene or get you some help?
Yes. I've been to the hospital several times, and they were always very supportive. They would bring me books and visit and, basically not abandon me.
Okay.
So that was very appreciative of that.
That was pretty important, probably, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely.
To help you get through that. So sounds like you've had a severe depression. Can you date back how long you've been struggling with depression? Can you have a sense of how long this has been?
Yes, about, 24 years.
24 years.
Yes.
How old are you now?
I'm 36.
You're 36, so we're talking since you were 12 years old.
Yes.
So you really have not known not being depressed.
Right.
Up until this point. never really experienced a life without depression. So I'm assuming you've received lots of treatment for this.
Yes, I've been on four or five different antidepressants. I couldn't name them all at this point. But what would happen is they sort of work for a while. Where I mean by sort of work, they would have a positive impact on the minor depressive episodes, but I still have the severe depressive episodes where I just stay in bed all day. And then after a couple of years, the antidepressant would just kind of crap out on me, and I have to switch to a new one.
Have you been through any sort of psychotherapy or counseling along the way?
I've tried, but basically I found it wasn't very effective. I've had about, let's see, three or four different therapists over the years, and in all cases, they just weren't really able to convince me that life was worth living, which is what I was after, you know. And so I go to them for a couple dozen sessions and then decide this is, you know, not working. And then a couple years later, I try again, and the same thing would happen.
So you really, at all turns that you made with the medications or counseling, you're just really getting discouraged, I would assume.
Yeah, very much.
And feeling like there's just nothing left for you.
Yeah, and I'd be told by doctors, well, someday we'll find the right medication for you, but after four or five medications, you start to stop believing that.
And start losing hope in that.
Yeah.
But that's actually going to be the case. Just maybe feel like they're telling you what you want to hear, but the results aren't happening.
Right.
So this brings us to the deep TMS. How did you learn about deep TMS?
Well, I met you in the hospital, and you suggested that it is an alternative therapy. And I was very skeptical at first because it sounded like whenever I hear magnets being used for medical purposes, I think, oh, he's going to put magnets in my chakras or something like that. And so I checked online, though, and it, you know, seemed like a legitimate treatment, and I had nothing to lose. So that's what got me started in the deep TMS therapy.
Yeah, I remember when I met you and took your, excuse me, your original history, pretty much dawned on me that that needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't promise you it would work, but I said this needs to happen because I just don't see too many other choices. Of course, there's ECT. That's always a choice, but it's a little more dramatic and difficult. And you're working, so you, when you went home, you needed to work. And with ECT, you can't always do that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But with TMS, you can. So I had to take that into consideration. So let me take just a quick second here. I'm Dr. David Kent. This is my show, The Dr. Kent Show. It airs every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. This is my third show, so I'm starting to get a little more comfortable doing this. You can go to my website and check out more information at treasurevalleytms.com. Also on Facebook, you can like me and follow me. I have lots of posts and lots of updated information. I bring on lots of patients who come on and provide their experience with the treatment and with depression and things like that. So it's very helpful to people. So let me come back to Kevin. We're talking about his depression. He's had lifelong depression. He's been depressed for 24 years. He's now 36 years old. So he's been depressed all of his life. I've got him answering some questions about his depression. And we're talking about deep TMS, which is a form of treatment for depression, which involves using electromagnets to treat the depression. It's FDA approved, actually. So, Kevin, what has been your response to deep TMS?
It's been very positive. It was, honestly, the deep TMS treatment was uncomfortable for the first week. It would cause my jaw to clench up, for example, and my hands to shake a little bit. But after the first week, it really stopped being uncomfortable. It was just routine at that point. And the effects on my depression have been almost miraculous. I mean, I haven't been depressed. I haven't felt as good in, well, 24 years. And It's also having a positive impact on my, I have a alcohol dependency because I self-medicate with alcohol, and now I don't need to do that anymore. So I'm able to finally treat both the alcoholism and the depression.
That's really remarkable. That's really remarkable. I wasn't, sure going into this, because I knew your history. Also, is it okay if I share with him about the other condition you have that you get medicine for?
Yes.
Kevin also has epilepsy, and it is a risk for TMS, because TMS can increase the risk of a seizure. And we knew that going into it with Kevin, but in his case, I knew that this was life and death, and that the possibility of having a seizure was less of a concern than the possibility of him ending his life, which is a much higher concern. So he's not had any seizures with this treatment. He's done really well. In fact, he's done awesome with this treatment, even better than I expected in some regards. So he's sitting here with me today on a radio show doing something he's normally very uncomfortable with, mm-hmm. getting out of his box. So that's pretty impressive. So compared to what you were like before the deep TMS, what do you feel like now?
Yeah, it's a night and day difference. There is a form that you would have me fill out every week rating my depression, and I think my numbers dropped from somewhere in the 20s to about a 1 or a 2 in terms of symptoms, things like how hopeless I was feeling, how suicidal I was feeling. I mean, I still rate myself a 1 on the depression scale because, I mean, nothing's perfect, but that I'm still able to function very well at that level.
That's as good a result as you can expect.
Yeah.
Because in the 20s, your score was, it's called a PHQ-9 test. It's a researcher-developed test, and it's been clinically proven to be reliable. And Kevin's score was in probably 23 or something like that. I can't remember, but it was in the 20s, which puts him in the severe range for depression. And now his score is basically nothing, 0, 1, or 2. That's considered a full remission from depression. And that's as good as you can expect mm-hmm. from any kind of treatment. Besides the uncomfortableness of the first week, any problems with the deep TMS?
No.
Do you feel any weirdness or unusual feelings on the deep TMS?
I had the jaw clenching and the hands shaking, but those are just something I had to get used to.
And that was just with the treatment itself. They didn't have it after the treatment or between treatments. It just right. with the treatment itself. But now that doesn't even happen at this point.
Right. I had no side effects after the treatment was over.
And for people out there, that jaw clenching and the shaking is normal with treatment. It's just superficial because the magnet can stimulate those superficial muscles a little bit, and that's normal. So it's nothing that we really are concerned about. It's never caused any long-term problems. So would you do it again if you needed it?
Yes, absolutely.
Doesn't sound like you'd have any hesitation there.
No.
Would you recommend this deep TMS to a friend or family?
Yes. Well, I'd recommend it if the medication wasn't working for them, which was the case with me. Actually, I'd probably recommend it even if the medication was working, just because my experience with medication is that it's always a halfway solution. It's always been a halfway solution for me. And the deep TMS was pretty much a full solution.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, I've been doing this for, I've been saying it on my other shows, I've been doing this for 30 years practicing psychiatry, and I'm prescribed medications. I'm a biologically trained psychiatrist, so I've used every form of biological treatment over the years, including ECT, and I still think ECT is a viable option for some people, and medications are as well. But even on medications, people can have problems with those medications. Even though they feel better, they have to suffer from some of the side effects of the medication. Whereas with deep TMS, other than the superficial things that happen with the treatment itself, there's no lingering side effects. There's no feeling of being medicated with the treatment.
And one of the effects is that I've lost 20 pounds since the deep TMS. Wow. It's because I no longer have to take medications that cause weight gain.
I didn't realize that. You do look better. I can tell that. I just didn't know why. Well, that's exciting. Just makes my day to hear that. So I want to thank Kevin for sharing his experience on the radio today. Appreciate it. I know that it was a little nerve-wracking, but it really is just a conversation with you and me.
Right.
So that's really what it is. But please visit my website. It's treasurevalleytms.com. And also my Facebook, which is Treasure Valley TMS. And on there, I'm asking people to get on my radio show link on my website and ask me a question. And then, or share an experience with me that you think is positive, and I might share it on the show. I might ask the question on the show. And I did get one question from a Jason, and he already posted a question for me. And his question basically was, I've been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, but I don't think I have that. I have another doctor who doesn't think I have it. And today you heard Kevin actually say he was diagnosed when he was younger with bipolar disorder, and he's never really had a manic episode. So the bottom line is you could be diagnosed with something besides depression, but you do want to make sure that you do or don't have that. Right now the FDA approves the deep TMS for depression only and not for bipolar, but it still does require some sorting out. And that's part of my evaluation, is I sort those things out. If someone truly hasn't had manic episodes or mania or really psychosis, then they may be a good candidate for TMS. And so that's the question from Jason. But please share your experiences on my website, ask me questions, and I'll try to share them on my show. So I'm all about connecting to the community and making this show useful to the listener. I want it to be real. I want to bring real people on the show, people who are really experiencing these things. I know that I want to reach out to people like Kevin, and I had Susan come on as well as Shane. All of them are kind of going through this, and I know lots of people out there that suffer from depression, and that's why I'm bringing them on the show, is that people could relate to these individuals who have gone through this. But I also want it to be positive. I want to show the success that we have. It's not all about people that don't respond, but people who do respond to treatment. And I do appreciate it, Kevin, for coming on today. Anything else you want to say or anything that comes to mind that you think off the top of your head?
No, I can't think of anything.
Okay, well, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you.
And I appreciate it. And we'll tune in next week on my show every Sunday at 9 a.m. on this station. I appreciate the radio station for having me on. You all have a good day today.